This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Thousands of people took to the streets in this country in all 50 states to protest the separation of migrant families and President Trump's zero-tolerance policy at the border. Almost 2 weeks ago, President Trump signed an executive order calling for an end to his own administration's policy on family separation. But it remains unclear how the administration actually plans to reunite the 2,000-plus children who had been separated from their families. Last week, a federal judge demanded that children be reunited with their families within 30 days. Joining us now is Debbie Nathan, a freelance reporter covering the border for The Intercept, and Dara Lind, a senior reporter with Vox covering immigration. Welcome to you both.
Hi, thank you.
Great to be on.
So, Debbie, let's start with you. You live in Brownsville, Texas, which is right on the border with Mexico. What are you seeing in terms of your reporting at the border?
Well, this area, this region is ground zero for zero tolerance and the separation of parents and kids. What I'm seeing still is a tremendous amount of confusion, and I've been interviewing parents in detention who, I mean, haven't even heard of the injunction or even the executive order. Parents who still haven't spoken with their children and who haven't become aware, haven't been told anything about how these reunifications might take place. And, you know, the other thing that I've seen is, especially during the demonstrations over the last, you know, really like 10 days, people coming out, and in some cases just, you get the feeling from some of the demonstrators that they're, particularly Latinos in this community, that they're really at the end of their rope emotionally and all other ways.
So I want to go back a second to the injunction, because this was something that happened just a couple days ago, and I'm not sure how much our listeners really understand what happened. So this was a federal judge that ruled that children needed to be reunited. Is there any movement on that front, or is it just pure confusion?
I think it's maybe confused movement. I mean, you know, I've been told, for example, that at the detention center that's closest to me in Brownsville, which is called Port Isabel, that there seem to be a lot of people, a lot of officials now coming into that facility. And that is supposed to be the staging area where people will be reunited. And I believe that it has the most parents detained. So, I mean, you know, so you hear about people going into that facility, but then when I talk to parents who are actually there, they haven't heard anything. There hasn't been any contact. And then lawyers I've spoken with that are working with people in other facilities say that it's still extremely hard to impossible for them to even locate the children on behalf of the parents.
The Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is responsible for keeping, you know, track of the children while they're in custody separated from their parents, testified that over the last week they've reunited a whole seven of the over 2,000 children who are still separated, which indicates that the pace on this is not quite at pace to get to reunifying all 2,000 within 30 days.
Now, what about the 500, though? Weren't there 500, and you're saying so? So tell us where that discrepancy comes in.
Right. So before the court order came down, but after President Trump signed the executive order that kind of opened the door for them to prosecute parents without separating families, Border Patrol and Customs and Border Protection said that they had returned 500 children in their custody to their parents. Now, what that means is that the law requires that within 72 hours, kids who are without their parents be sent to ORR, under Health and Human Services. So that means that there were 500 kids who between, you know, in the 72 hours before last Friday evening, so probably the day before Trump signed the executive order, had been separated from their parents and could then be easily reunited with their parents without having to go back to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which has its own process that starts when a child is transferred to custody there.
Yeah, these families were like in what the immigrants call the perrera, which is everybody's seen the pictures of the kennels or the really like the fences, like people on one side of a fence and then the kids on another side of the fence and the men in one area, the women in another. And in a lot of cases, you know, people could see each other. Parents could see children and vice versa. So it was no big deal because they were all literally in the same facility to just put them back together again. But, you know, those were that window that Dara's talking about. You know, it doesn't really mean anything because the real problem is when the parents were sent to ICE, which sent them to the detention facilities, and the children were sent to Office of Refugee Resettlement Facilities, you have two different agencies that don't seem to be communicating with each other.
Yeah, it's worth noting that for everything Debbie is saying about the lack of coordination, the government was telling the federal judge in this case that they, and telling the public, that they knew where all the children were, they knew where all the parents were, they could reunite them whenever they wanted, and they were choosing to allow them to be reunited when the parent got a final order of deportation. They could have the child come back with them to their home country. That, I think, is part of what led the judge to believe that it was possible to order them to reunite families within 30 days. And it's not clear whether the government overpromised on this or whether they're just not going as quickly as you would assume they could if they really did know where everyone was.
So this sounds to me like a mess, quite frankly. And I'm wondering if either of you can help us understand, how is the federal government promising to, or at least attempting after this ruling, to reunite families, and how are they keeping track of these children?
I think that as far as keeping track of children are concerned, the thing you have to remember about this is there are several different agencies involved here. And so each agency may very well be taking care of, you know, people in its custody. The Office of Refugee Resettlement may very well know where children are, whether they're in temporary holding facilities, whether they've been placed with relatives as sponsors, or placed in some cases with temporary foster care, and not necessarily have the wherewithal to communicate that with the Department of Homeland Security, because this agency is set up to deal with kids who come into the U.S. without their parents. It's not set up to simultaneously be taking care of children and to figure out which detention center along the border their parents are being held in. That's not a function they've served until really this spring.
You know, and just down here, I'll tell you a couple of experiences that I've had as reporting. I was in court a few days ago, and there were 18 people in a mass trial, and four of the people were Central Americans. And when the judge, who has taken to asking people, "Have any of you been separated from your children?" one man said yes. He was from El Salvador. And the judge said to the prosecutor, "Where is the child?" And the prosecutor said, "I don't know, judge, but I can find out momentarily." And sure enough, a few minutes later, another prosecutor entered with a folder, and the one who was doing the trial said, "Oh, you know, this child is in," and actually it turned out to be the place where Senator Markley had been. So, you know, it took minutes to locate this child. But on the other hand, I have also spoken with, as I said, lawyers who have been unsuccessful. You know, these are lawyers, pro bono lawyers, who've come in and they've got individual clients that they're working with, and they've been unable to locate the kids. And I've also heard from lawyers that they've heard of ORR and DHS, like, asking nonprofits, "Where is this particular child?" So, you know, it's just hard to figure out what they know and what they don't know.
Adding to that is also the fact that there are children scattered all across the United States. We've seen one of our local channels here in New York reported that New York State, in fact, is one of the states that has received some of the largest numbers of kids. The question I have is, how is it that these kids are being separated into these states? What is the state's responsibility once a child crosses into New York or Texas or anywhere that they might be? And what can the states do to, if anything, to help move this reunification process along?
You know, it's very weird for me to see this. And, you know, Debbie, I'm sure that you have a little bit of deja vu as well, because the last time that anyone was really paying attention to these, you know, shelters where kids are being held was in 2014, when the problem was, you know, lots of children coming across without family members into the U.S., and when the local pressure was from communities that didn't want unauthorized immigrants in their communities. So to see the same kind of localized political backlash for very different reasons is odd, and does kind of go some way to explaining why the government is trying to be a little bit secretive about this. They don't really want to give information out about where minors are being held for, you know, reasons of privacy, for reasons of wanting to protect kids. But it's important to remember that, again, they weren't set up to keep kids near their parents because they weren't set up for kids who were in the same country as their parents. So in many cases, the facilities that are best equipped to care for kids that don't look like, you know, jails that have been stood up in 2 weeks' time are places in New York and, you know, Massachusetts and other states. But that does pose a real problem. If and when parents are released from immigration detention, they have to try to figure out what time zone their child is in. They have to figure out what hours are, you know, it's going to be possible to contact them. Some parents are being charged, and relatives are being charged airfare to get their children back. So the state's responsibility is a little bit, it kicks in a little bit more when children are being placed with families, with sponsors. And at that point, you know, state guarantees for, say, representation in immigration court kick in. But I think that, you know, hopefully this will be a moot problem as kids start getting reunited with their parents more quickly. But in the meantime, I wouldn't be surprised if we did see states like New York stepping up and demanding more information about the children in there.
So what are the, I guess, the rules for who these children can be reunited with? I mean, is there a vetting process for that?
There have been some problems in the past with how that vetting has worked. The other problem here is that agency policies at the Office of Refugee Resettlement say that the first preference is to release someone to a parent. And there really hasn't been a lot of clarity from the agency as to whether if the parent is in immigration detention and they don't know how long that parent will be detained, whether they're going to keep the child in some kind of temporary shelter for however long it takes until they can be reunited with the parent, or whether they'll be willing to find an uncle or a cousin or somebody who might be theoretically down the chain and release them more quickly.
So here's another problem with that. So there are relatives who these children can be released to, but many of them themselves are undocumented. And lately, this is a recent development, a requirement has been instituted by the Trump administration that these people who want custody, these relatives or whoever wants to take charge of the child, has to provide fingerprints and has to disclose their immigration status. And this is, of course, very frightening and is discouraging people probably from applying or, you know, coming forward and saying that they will take custody.
I mean, on the one hand, that sounds like a logical step to take to protect the safety of these children, right? We don't, there's a lot of concern that these children could be trafficked if they're not protected, or in other cases, maybe taken in by folks who are, who they shouldn't be taken in by. What's your, both of your sense of how quickly and how realistic it'll be for these children to be reunited with their parents?
Well, first I want to say that, you know, the idea that children are going to be trafficked, particularly for tiny children, is really ludicrous. You know, it's a piece of rhetoric that comes out of the anti-trafficking movement that was taken up by people in the Trump administration. So, you know, people have to fill out now this, parents even have to fill out an 8-page form. Parents have had their children taken from them, have to fill out an 8-page form and go through this vetting process where they sort of have to prove that it's safe for the child to be with them when the child was removed from them under the presumption that it wasn't safe simply because they came up through in dangerous circumstances. And of course, they had no control over those dangerous circumstances. And people that I've spoken with have said, I had to do it because it was safer than staying in my country and having both of us killed or my son killed or having me killed. So, you know, it's very, I think it's a very cruel situation, but I just wanted to point out that this little piece of rhetoric about trafficking is pretty ludicrous.
Yeah, I agree that it's a very remote concern that, you know, because of the way this story first came to public attention, I think has kind of assumed an oversized importance. But I also do think that it's going to be a very real political problem for HHS to try to deal with as it tries to find placement. I think the bottom line here is the government told the federal courts that they could do this, you know, whenever they wanted to. We're going to see whether that was a realistic promise or not. But the other question for me is, under what circumstances are families going to be reunited? Are we going to see families getting reunited by being placed in immigration detention for unknown amounts of time as they continue to fight the Flores settlement in court? Or are we going to see them, you know, allowing families to get released with ankle bracelets or case management systems that, you know, constitute quote unquote catch and release that the Trump administration, I'm sorry, has been complaining about to begin with?
And we've also been focused very much on the more than 2,000 children that have been separated from their families. But I'm wondering what's happening to folks who are continuing to try and come into the United States?
So actually, so-called catch and release has been going on during the entire time that the government was saying that there was zero tolerance. I mean, people have been coming in since May 7th when the separation of children and families, you know, was put into play, into official play. And people are still being released with their kids and given ankle bracelets. So that's another piece of chaos. You know, it has been the case that there simply hasn't been infrastructure to, you know, separate and detain all of these people. So yes, people are coming in now and they're getting the ankle bracelets and they're still with their kids. But I know that because there's a shelter here in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas, which is packed now with such people. But, you know, there were people coming in before who were going into the shelters. I was surprised. I was in El Paso and saw two adults and three kids walking down the street, and one had a bracelet on her ankle. And I asked them what was up, and they said, well, we were caught yesterday crossing, and we were let go and put into a shelter. So it's not true that this has even worked so smoothly, you know, this separation since it started.
That said, they are taking this opportunity after the executive order was signed to kind of increase that capacity. The request that was sent to the Department of Defense last week said that they ultimately want to be able to put 12,000 families in detention, which is a many-fold increase from what long-term family detention looks like right now. So it's entirely possible that more families will end up detained for, you know, as long as months or even years together under the, you know, post-family separation policy than were actually separated under the peak of family separation.
And I have to say that people will keep coming. I mean, they will keep coming because, again, what they tell me is that even though this is pretty horrendous for them, it's not anywhere near as much as the risk of staying where they are.
Debbie Nathan is a freelance reporter covering the border for The Intercept, and Dara Lind is a senior reporter with Vox covering immigration. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.